Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is one of our favorites, Ed Cox, chairman of the New York State Republican Party. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah. Welcome back, Ed.
Thank you. Yeah. So, happy holidays to you.
Now, I think a lot of people know that you are Dick Nixon's son-in-law. So my first question would be, what were the parties like around the White House at Christmas time?
Actually, there is a lot of feeling in the parties get together. Things are informally a lot. The people who formally would go after each other on policy during Christmas time would get together and have good cheer. I'm not sure if that's happening now. But Washington is different than it was back then, Alan.
What was his best present to you ever, besides his daughter?
Besides his daughter, his best present. That's a very gee. We had a lot of wonderful times around Christmas, particularly when he was a former president here, and we would go out to Saddle River, and the whole family, children and grandchildren, would gather there. And it was a very, very special time, a very special time in Saddle River. He and Mrs. Nixon spent more time in their home in Saddle River than they spent in any home in their entire lives.
And where's Saddle River?
They're always moving.
And where was Saddle River? Is that New Jersey?
Saddle River, New Jersey. New Jersey, Bergen County.
Interesting. Okay, let's get down to Tuckless, as the former Governor Cuomo used to say. So I see that New York State Assembly Republican Minority Leader Brian Kolb has announced he will run for governor. He's a great favorite of mine. He's a moderate man. What's your reaction? Has it been lukewarm, or has it been more than that?
Actually, I am a product, as far as New York State politics is concerned, of our minority in the assembly. Right. Rap Rapelier put me on a commission and brought me into talking with the staff, and I got involved in the 94 election and the convention. And Brian leads that minority. And that minority, being a very definite minority, relies on their politics, on making good policy and pushing it until it is accepted because it's good policy. And, for instance, the 2% tax cap, that was a product of the minority, Republican minority in the assembly led by Brian Kolb. And it is now law because it was a good idea. So we are talking about a man who has helped formulate good ideas, has sculpted them in the cauldron of the assembly. And so to have him out there as our first announced candidate is a very positive thing. He's going to be talking about good policies for New York State.
Well, you know, I like the guy a lot, and I consider him to be a fairly moderate man in sort of the George Pataki image. You've got some other guys out there who are not nearly as moderate as he, but his problem is he doesn't have an awful lot of money, and we know that this governor, Cuomo, has $25, $26 million in his coffers already.
Yeah, he may have that money in his coffers, but issues like corruption are very hard to overcome. Mm. And in his press conference yesterday, he was very touchy about that, about the upcoming trials, about the Sam Hoyt issues, and why did he appoint him after he knew that Sam Hoyt had woman issues. So in the end, yes, it makes a difference, money, to get your message out. But if you have a good message and you're a good candidate and the state is having problems, I'm talking about statewide elections now, you can win.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. Ed Cox. You can win, but, you know, how do you overcome the Cuomo name in New York City? You know, Cuomo's a hero in New York City. They think the father and the son are the same person. They hear Cuomo. They don't know squat about state politics. And so they like Cuomo. How do you get over that one?
Well, they did like Cuomo, and then the subways didn't work, and they, whose fault is this? And it's pretty clear that he runs the MTA, and he didn't pay attention to the maintenance of the subways. And they have a signaling system that is put together during the depression. And it's falling apart, and the subways are delayed, and a lot of problems, and needs a huge amount of. And he just didn't pay attention to that. Well, he was out there throwing money around the state for bright, shiny projects to get reelected in 2014. His polls dropped precipitously in the city. I don't think they have the same opinion that you just expressed about Andrew Cuomo now, simply because of that one issue. And while this is going on, he's come unhinged. He was talking about, well, we're going to put lights and music on our bridges. And it turns out that money for that is going to be coming from fixing the MTA system, the subways in New York City. So he's got a lot of problems. He knows it. He's campaigning very hard now. He's trying to avoid the press. And as a result, when he does run into them, he's having problems, as he did have yesterday, because he's off balance when he talks to them. He's not ready to do that. So I think that kind of then sort of goes that out into the public. The public gets a feel for this. Something's wrong here. Maybe we need something new. Not Andrew Cuomo.
Well, two roads I want to go on that you've just opened up. The first is Cuomo seems to be blaming his arch rival Bill de Blasio for the subways. Does he get away with that?
Well, and de Blasio blames Cuomo. Cuomo for it. These are two scorpions in a bottle going at each other, trying to fight who's the most progressive, and that's not good for New York. I know there's always tension between the governor and the mayor, but often is a creative, productive tension where in the end they get together and do something that's good. Here it's pure political power they're fighting over, and now it's turned to not fighting over political power in New York State. It's using, in each of their case, using New York State as a stepping stone to the presidency and trying to please the far left of their party that decides who gets nominated to be president. And that's not good for New York State. And I don't think the voters here like to be used as a stepping stone to another office.
The last time we saw something like this going on was between Rockefeller, you know, and Lindsay, and they virtually destroyed each other's chances for running for president.
Rockefeller did a lot of good things for the state in the process, establishing the SUNY system, the privilege of being a trustee of for 14 years to educate the baby boom generation that was coming through. There were a lot of good things done under Rockefeller. And they did go at each other, that's true. But New York City really suffered during that period of time, as you well know, Ellen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then you made mention of Andrew Cuomo and his inability to handle the press on the fly. Yesterday, he had quite a thing with Karen DeWitt, who is our reporter, you know, a wonderful woman of great stature. And he went after her and said she should be ashamed of herself for asking him why he appointed Sam Hoyt when he knew he had women problems.
He has not had a real press conference since June. My father-in-law, you mentioned at the start, and he was president. He had a press conference one a month to what was an antagonistic press, but he would get ready for it. Bill Sapphire believed in press conferences. Mm-hmm. It was head of his press operation. The great Bill Sapphire, I'll say. Bill really believed that in that process, all the information comes up from the bureaucracy and the agencies, and you've got to be ready to answer every question. And just in getting ready for it, the president gets ready to be the chief executive of government and get the right things done and that questions get answered and things happen there. Then you go to the press, and the press, frankly, have a lot of their own sources, and you learn things in a press conference. So some questions you can't answer, you go back, you find out, well, what's going on, and you get stuff done. Andrew Cuomo's not done that since June. And as a result, he is really off balance, and his administration's off balance because they're not getting the feedback from the press that they then have to respond to, and that tension that's very productive. He actually apologized on that issue. I think he called up Karen and apologized. And then he had a telephone press conference with planted questions, the way it works, rather than a real press conference. So he doesn't understand the basic things he needs to do to be a good governor going forward here.
Okay, so let's talk about Roy Moore. Remember him? Down in Alabama, red state, he loses. There are ripples throughout the Republican Party. There does seem to be some dissonance between, you know, the Republican, for want of a better word, establishment, guys like you, you know, the radical guys represented by Steve Bannon. What do you make of the damage control here?
Well, we had a very flawed candidate in Roy Moore. And the interesting thing is, if you trace it back, and I met Luther Strange, the appointed senator appointed by governor of Alabama who was resigning. Luther was a very fine man, but I just after talking to him for a few minutes, I thought, this guy is not a politician, a good man, but not a politician. If he had run a more aggressive campaign, I think the problems with Roy Moore would have come out, would have been dealt with in the primary, and we would have had a different kind of candidate. Now, people are trying to analogize from Roy Moore to what happened with Scott Brown in Massachusetts, when we won Ted Kennedy's Senate seat in Massachusetts. Completely different situation. Because Scott Brown campaigned against a very capable attorney general of Massachusetts and won on a very big issue, which was Obamacare and what the public felt about it. And that, in essence, was the beginning of the problems of the making it clear there are problems in the administration of Obama's administration. You really can't analogize. This was a flawed candidate. Rather than two very good candidates, as happened in that 2009-2010 race in Massachusetts, which said that the Obama administration was in trouble going forward.
Yeah, so what? I mean, the big problem here is that the Democrats, Chuck Schumer and others, are arguing that just like Mitch McConnell did in that Scott Brown thing, you ought to wait, let the guy be seated, and then vote on with one vote margin on the tax package. And McConnell, hypocritically in my mind, is now saying, oh no, this is different. Just like you said, this is different. I don't think it's so different.
Well, as I was pointing out, it is different. You're not talking about health care reform. You're not talking about the federal budget. You're not talking, they were not talking about tax cuts. They're not talking about infrastructure, any of the major issues that are now being dealt with by this administration. And the tax cuts are going to happen. And the economy is growing because of what was done. I mean, I was talking to Steve Forbes several nights ago, and he said we'll be growing at 3.5% in the fourth quarter. It will be three quarters of growth over 3%, which hasn't happened in many, many years. And that's because of the deregulation efforts that the president is absolutely focused on. He is focused on economic growth and good jobs because that's what elected him. And people have the benefits of effective regulations, but basically getting rid of regulations that smother industries, which the Obama administration put a lot of those regulations on the healthcare industry, on the energy in industry, on the finance industry. And as businesses get sense, now we're going to be free to do business the way we should do it and to grow our companies. And that kind of optimism, business confidence high, consumer confidence is at record highs. Stock market's doing well as a result. And that's because of the deregulation efforts that have been done, mainly by executive order, but also by 14 acts of Congress in an unprecedented way that the president signed. But those issues were not the issues that were discussed in the race.
Okay.
It was an issues of a flawed candidate. In the Scott Brown race in Massachusetts, which in many cases said the Obama administration was failing, it was about a major issue. It was about Obamacare, which was hanging fire right at that time. And I like to point out, by the way, Ted Kennedy, you know, as he was dying in 2009, said, we should have listened to President Nixon 35 years ago on health care and accepted what he put out there for universal health care.
You bet. I'm for universal health care, but I also take some great umbrage, Ed Cox, at some of the things you've just said. When you free up everybody to do whatever they want, you get things like the mortgage crisis of, 2008, whatever, 28. And what do you do?
Well, as I accused Andrew Cuomo of in the 2010 campaign, yeah. I said when he was ahead of HUD, he wrote the rule that required Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to require banks to make loans to people who could not pay them back. And because of that, and I'm sure it was done with all good intents, but the road to hell is paved with good intents, and Andrew Cuomo helped put New York, put the nation in financial hell. Well, you know what? He said after that, yeah, in response to that, in a Newsday conference, he said, yeah, that's true, but the next administration did it even more. And that's true. The George W. Bush administration did do it more. They pushed the same policy. These are rules and regulations, as Peter Wallace has written about in depth. It's the rules and regulations that created the subprime market that put us in financial hell and caused the Great Recession. I really turned that argument on you that it was government that had a huge. Now, look, I'll admit there was not good due diligence done by Wall Street on those subprime instruments, that the rating agencies didn't rate them well. But in the end, it was driven by rules and regulations that, in part, Andrew Cuomo was responsible for when he was head of HUD. He admitted it.
Okay. By the way, I don't doubt that. I've been saying that for a long time. I thought that he gets to be the secretary, and he thinks he's going to get a lot of votes by saying put everybody into a house, and he doesn't think it through.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
But he's right. He was right. Also, the George W. Bush administration pushed the same thing on the same. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, and the government in this case, coming from the very top, was pushing the wrong policies just because they were feel-good policies.
Yeah, but two wrongs never make a right. You know that, Ed Cox. Let's go to your substantial problems as the head of the state party. People in New York, let's face it, they just hate Donald Trump's guts. And it's reflected in all of the polls. And now you got guys running for Congress, people like John Faso, Elise Stefanik, and so many others. And those seats have been targeted by this governor. And I think he's got a good arguing point that if, you know, these people have been supporting the president, out with them.
Well, you know, as the Clinton people famously said, it's the economy, stupid. And if we're headed to 4% economic growth in November 2018, first of all, you will hear that from the President of the United States, because he was the one person saying we're going to have 4% growth. And even his close advisor says, no, that's not going to happen. But if we are headed there, and you can see the Fed's anticipating that because they're driving interest rates up because they're getting scared of inflation now. They were scared of deflation before. Now they're scared of inflation. But they're anticipating really strong economic growth. That could be the most important issue with respect to, and the Congress gets credit for being a part of that with making more effective but rational regulations, taking the huge regulatory burden off a lot of our industries, and having the tax cuts that will make us competitive in the world economy, bringing back $3 or $4 trillion from abroad and putting into the capital investment because of immediate deduction of capital investments, having pass-throughs for small businesses, pass-throughs taxation at a lower rate, so small businesses grow, the major job creators. And Congress and the administration could very well get the benefit of that. We are at a low point now because the legislation hasn't passed. It's not absolutely clear what the economic benefit of the policies of this administration in Congress. By November, it could be very clear, and you could see it in very strong economic growth and good jobs being created again.
Okay, now Ed Cox, we got 4 minutes left, and this is the 1 minute round. I ask a fast question; you have 1 minute to answer. Okay, the New York State Senate Republicans are kept in office by the so-called traitors, the Independent Democratic Conference Democrats, who have been organizing with the Republicans, and now they say they'll reunite with the Democrats after the elections. You have 1 minute to answer this.
Simca Felder, who is a Democrat of very strong principles, who is part of the Republican conference, and that gives the Republicans an absolute majority in the state Senate.
But, of course, if they lose some elections in 18, then they won't, right?
Those elections, the empty seats now are seats that were Democratic seats, so at least through the budget, you're going to have empty seats that are Democratic seats. That, again, it means that the Republicans will be in the majority right through the budget cycle. And we'll see what happens after that. But it's a question of replacing Democrats, not replacing Republicans.
Your 1 minute on that one is up. Now let's go to guns. Andrew Cuomo is getting a head start on his state of the state proposal, says he'll propose a bill to close a loophole that allows some convicted of domestic violence to possess guns. That sounds like a good idea to me. Why would you leave a gun in a house of somebody who's been convicted of beating his wife?
Yeah, look, there, people who are doing criminal things should not have guns. And in fact, you need to have that reporting system work and work well. It apparently didn't work well in the case of the Air Force not reporting an individual who should have been reported, and the results were not good. So you need to make sure that that is a good workable system that includes all crimes that do relate to guns. Absolutely.
Not 2 minutes. Senator Gillibrand is now going after the Clintons, who have been very good to her over the years. Some people brand her as a hypocrite for doing that. And she has been in the forefront. We hear she wants to run for president of the United States, and she's saying that the president should resign. Should he?
No. He was elected president by the people of this country. With all the issues out on the table, including the issues that she says he should resign over, and we have to move on. And he is the president of the United States. He is the president of all the people, and we should all be hoping for his success and what he's trying to do on the major issues he's elected on, which is basically economic issues, good jobs for the American people.
Well, would she make a good presidential candidate, Kirsten Gillibrand?
Well, she has certainly proved very flexible, as you well know, Alan, on her political side. I watched her quickly morph from being a conservative upstate member of Congress who was absolutely pro-life and pro-Second Amendment. And boy, did she move quickly to being very pro-choice and very anti-Second Amendment. It was remarkable to see how quickly she could change. I think you want a person of principle as president of the United States, who is working on those rather than someone so flexible as she is.
Yeah, but as a political realist, doesn't she risk losing some people voting for her who really still like the Clintons when she said Clinton should have resigned when he's president?
No, but she's just trying to grab the spotlight and to have it shine on her. But in the process, I think it was too much. Look at me. I'm making a big splash. In the process, I think people look back on what Clinton and Gingrich did in a number of forms, fighting it out, going back and forth, but came up with good welfare reform. And Clinton actually came out and said the era of big government is over. And he meant it. And she is attacking that person in order just to elevate her picture, her visibility in the political arena. I don't think that works.
It's always fun to have our friend Ed Cox on with us, the chairman of the New York State Republican Party. And he is a guy who always comes on and dukes it out with me. I appreciate it so much. I appreciate it so much, Ed.
I always enjoy it, Alan.
It's great to talk to you.
Keep me on my toes.
We'll talk to you the next time. Thanks again, Ed Cox.
I look forward to it.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.